Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 16th day of October.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, Greg Ginter of FC Stone from Chesterfield, Missouri, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. While you're there, please do take time to purchase your tickets for our Farm Assets Conference. That's in Normal, Illinois on the 24th day of November. It runs most of the day and will include 14 of our regular on-air analysts, along with special programming on crop insurance, the new farm bill, and the value of land. It's just $25 the Monday before Thanksgiving at the Marriott Hotel in Normal, Illinois. 800-898-1065 or online at willag.org to buy your tickets today. I think, Greg Ginter, I'd like to start with you. What's on your list of topics to talk about for the day?
Well, I would say the most interesting, or the at least the most frequently asked things are, at least for me personally, is the barge freight and logistics system as far as grain movement and things of that type values. Also, how that plays into terminal grain bases and just the export market in general. And then kind of round out the third one with recent commodity moves in this week and kind of what we're seeing and why and where we might be headed to.
And just as a reminder, Greg, to our listeners, you're at FC Stone. You're in Chesterfield, Missouri, and the things that you mentioned are kind of in your wheelhouse. Can you give us a quick review of where you came from and what your background is?
Sure. I grew up in central Illinois on a family farm. Went to SIU Carbondale, got a job at ADM, worked my way up, ended up, my last posting was here in St. Louis at the export terminal, and joined FC Stone about a little over 4 years ago, and basically handle hedge accounts, spec accounts, market movements, cash grain.
Okay, so that means everybody else will be asking you some questions about the river and movement on the river. Let's go on to a couple of other folks with us. Matt Bennett has been an originator in the past, now works for Channel Seeds, and he is in Windsor, Illinois. He farms, too. Matt, what's on your list?
Well, I think a couple different things. First of all, his last point about where we've been here lately. I know that this week we've seen some strength, and as I was talking with you, Todd, before we got on the phone, our lows in, and just wondering what everyone else thinks as far as what we're going to see for harvest pressure, because we will be seeing, with the good weather, a significant amount of harvest in the next 2 weeks. Looking a little bit ahead as far as where D15 corn is hovering right around the $4 level. I know, reading Dr. Good's piece on Farm Doc the other day, he basically is saying that he doesn't think that the levels we've been at are going to be adequate to secure the kind of acreage that we're going to see. And so that kind of piggybacks with my last one, which would be what's the ratio going to go to as far as the No-15 to the D15, which is 2.46 to 1 currently. And I guess my tendency is to believe that's going to definitely get maybe closer to the 2.1 or 2.2 to 1 range when it's all said and done.
Thank you, Matt. Let's move now to Merrill Crowley at Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois. Your thoughts, Merrill?
I'd like to talk more about the fundamentals that are going to support grain and soybeans to continue to extend the current rally. Like the other two gentlemen, the confusion that's going on with the movement in the price this week. Is the money just coming from the equity or markets, or is the money just heading to the sidelines? And are we able to quantify how much money might switch into the grains and oil seeds from the financials and the oil market? does the crop size matter? I know that's a size matter question, but are we starting now to really start to concentrate on demand? And will we see hedge pressure develop tomorrow, or has harvest been delayed enough that we won't see it until next week?
And finally, our fourth panelist, who you can hear each and every Monday on the Mid-Morning Market Report and the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580 or at willag.org, is Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and serves as the company's senior grains analyst.
Well, what's front and center is echoed or brought up by the other panels, a little bit of confusion here, especially from agriculture, talking to producers. They lean to be a little bit more of a fundamental side. And the question is, you know, fundamentals, we've got a situation where we're going to have plenty of supply, 2 billion bushel corn, 400 million bushel bean carryouts, not incredibly bullish, but yet the market's going higher here. And the question is, who's buying, why, and what's going on here as we go through harvest here, basically what's been echoed through the countryside here, Todd.
Okay, so let's go ahead and start on some of these things. I think let's start with the confusion and the money flow. Merrill, this was on your list. It was on Kurt's list as well. Where's the money gone? Where's it headed, do you suppose?
Well, currently I'm sure that we're seeing some money come out of the stock market as it falls. With the corn prices low, it's almost a copy of the same situation we had last year, only it started developing more in December of last year and help the grain markets move up to their highs in May. I'm not sure how much money is coming out of the oil market. I'm thinking that with the oil market, more than money coming out, I'm thinking we're seeing them having, if they're long, they're hurting and having to get out, and then their spread was against the corn market, so they're getting out of or the grain markets, and they're getting out of their shorts or the grain market, covering their shorts there, which is helping to push the market higher.
On the confusion front, Kurt, do you have any clearer picture of really what's happening in the marketplace?
Well, what we've seen is there's been a lot of advertisement of a fall low, 1st of October, Columbus Day. A lot of people go back to LPD days where you make that move Columbus Day traditionally and see some follow through in through here. But, you know, it's been weather. It's kept hedge pressure on the sidelines for somewhat. But I think what some of the buyings come from, not only from the technical side, the green line goes above the red line, but there's a percentage of players out there who look for overvalued and undervalued commodities to invest in. And when you look at the grain market, a couple years ago to where it's at today, they view that as a buying opportunity, especially when corn approached $3 and beans in the low $9 level from a value point of view. And even fundamentally near-term in through here, we're seeing Asia, Chinese crushing margins are improving somewhat. So there's ideas that Asia could be back into a buyer in through here. But the main thing, too, you got to keep in mind, Todd, it's an election year. So here we go. We'll see what happens.
Well, it's been an interesting week in the marketplace. Both corn and soybeans are up off their lows, not only this week, but for a couple of weeks now. I'm wondering whether this gives you pause to think a bit more, Matt Bennett, about whether the lows really are in, whether that's really a possibility with such a large crop, we think, still out in the field and yet to come in place for both corn and soybeans.
Right. I mean, that's a great point. I mean, whenever you look, again, we were talking about this earlier, and I think 24% harvest progress on corn with a crop this size leads me to believe this late in the year, if a guy can get, good days in, which obviously we're working with shorter days now, but pretty much everyone's going to be in the field all at the same time. And so it leads you to believe whenever everyone's busy, that you'll probably either see a combination of a little bit weaker basis, maybe a lot of harvest pressure, a combination of the two. But I do think that it's been awfully impressive to see the way that these markets have reacted. Last week, obviously, we had a great week going before the report and then bounced right back here again this week. So as far as I'm concerned, I feel fairly comfortable that, testing the lows is not going to happen right away. And I think leading into this really good period of good weather, you would have thought we would have come in today and maybe been off just a little bit, and then we turn right around and see the buying come back in again. So, you know, I feel pretty comfortable that right now we're in pretty good shape, although I'm not, you know, interested in going out and buying a bunch of bushels either. So I think that it's going to be really interesting moving forward, a little bit of a seesaw pattern, but I don't think that we're going to be in a free fall like we were, you know, before, you know, the last couple of weeks.
Hey, Greg, what's the Illinois and Mississippi River telling you about the marketplace?
Well, it's certainly just from a barge freight perspective and a buy basis, it is a big crop, and it is all moving. It seems like at the same time, you just get these tidal waves of grain like we saw 2 weeks ago, and basis just got absolutely slammed for about, I'd say, about 40 cents on corn. Barge freight doubled. You know, there's definitely a lot of moving parts that go along with this harvest, one of which is the northbound barge program, which has soaked up a lot of the empties for fertilizer and salt and fracking sand and things like that would normally move by rail. But given the rail logistical problems that they've had over the last year and a half, it has definitely put transportation at a premium, and that has played into this basis just absolutely kind of eroding. I would say it will probably get worse before it gets better as we go into this weekend and we see a good portion of the crop come to market. So I'm hopeful that it holds steady and that we find we made a big enough hole in the last week or two with the rains that we've had and the time that we've had to move grain around. But it is going to be a challenge.
You know, wait a second. I want to understand the barge freight just a bit better because I think what you just told me was that barges coming northbound are at a premium, roughly speaking.
Correct.
And that they're being filled with lots of things that normally would have been on rail because the rail, of course, is a premium and it's locked up hauling crude oil around. But does that mean – what does that mean about the southbound freight? It sounds like the southbound's more of a backhaul than it had been before, but I'm not sure that I understand.
It definitely feels that way, you know, with a finite amount of barges, and with it seems like the barge system has become the workhorse now, as opposed to rail, with it being dedicated to oil and their products. Whenever the northbound program normally dries up about September, and everybody's got everything in place with the cold winter that we had prior, the past winter, they ran out of a lot of salt products up north, and you know, fertilizer always kind of has its own little timing that go with it. But it seems like everything, as far as what was needed to go north, kind of fell all in the same time frame. So what you had was them, the northbound shippers gobbling up freight. And then when we got into harvest, starting with Memphis, Cairo, Illinois area south, you had a lot of grain hit the market at the same time. And there wasn't a whole lot of open freight to be used to ship to the Gulf. So it's a very, very tight supply. So whenever somebody comes into the market and needs some sort of freight, it doesn't take much to move it a great deal.
All right. So that's kind of what I was thinking, that it was not that you had a whole bunch of barges available. It's that they're all full and they've been moving north at a different time than they normally would. So they're just out of place.
Right.
That's going to create some problems, or has created problems. Will it continue to create problems, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it appears that the northbound shippers are actually having a difficult time, obviously, getting anything with as small a supply as is available. And now you're looking at those northbound bidders are out in the deferreds now into the December, January, February spots, trying to reserve freight out there. So now you have another issue that will come up in the future where majority of the grain that will move out of the country in those winter months will be kind of landlocked when the river freezes north of, say, the mid-Mississippi and upper Illinois. And everything will start moving down into these other areas that can ship, and you'll kind of develop the same kind of problems that we're seeing now as far as available freight and what price that will be at.
Yeah, so this is a bottleneck that really could develop in December, January, when the river freezes. It could create a severe bottleneck if we don't move it out. Matt, do you understand the problems that might be created out of this?
Yes, I mean, I've heard a little bit from guys in the fertilizer industry, actually, that there's been a handful of barges that have had a slow process getting unloaded because there's a lot of people that have full warehouses of fertilizer. And I can tell you, in our neck of the woods, there's been very little fertilizer spread so far this fall. Obviously, weather's played into that. I think, financial implications have definitely played into that. And so moving forward, it's going to be pretty interesting. And I think it's very interesting to hear what he's got to say about this. But I think in the middle of the winter, we could be looking at a really tough situation. You know, obviously the rail, as he said, is being dedicated to oil. And it's been, especially in certain parts of the world. You know, whenever I was in South Dakota here in August, I mean, those guys still had corn piled on the ground. And so it's just amazing to see how slow movement has become since we've dedicated so much more of the rail to the oil. But you know, whenever the river freezes over, I could see that we would have extreme issues moving grain. And boy, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to pose, but it's going to pose some major problems, especially with a record huge crop.
Yeah, so transportation, distribution of a record crop for both corn and soybeans looks like it could get to be really sticky as we move through the fall and into the winter time frame. When you think about that, and maybe each of you can take this up in whatever form you want, Kurt, I'd like to start with you. What does it tell you producers should be considering in the store versus sell part of their program with their unpriced corn and beans at the moment?
Well, in the camp of just storing at this point in time, I look at the July corn futures near this 382, you know, versus local cash bids here, you know, 305. You know, same thing on the beans. I know there's some pent-up demand here for the beans, but go out to July beans, you know, looking close to $10, and locally here we're $9.40. I'm willing to just plain hedge it and sit on it here and take advantage of some maybe tightness or recovery here going into mid-December once harvest is wrapped up.
Merrill?
I'm actually thinking about holding the soybeans simply because it just seems like the basis is going to have to do something to pull this grain out of farmers' hands somewhere in here, or the price, or a combination of both. How do you pay for the storage rates that are being asked unless you move prices higher? I realize, you know, a lot of times you widen the basis out, but our local elevators around here have a problem loading a 100-car train with soybeans because not because they don't have the soybeans in their facilities, but they don't own enough of those soybeans to ship them. Reading where the Dakotas are starting to go, elevators are starting to go to cash only on beans, and that's where our biggest harvest has taken place is in the northern tier on the beans, and yet somebody's coming to this market to buy these soybeans to provide for the excellent crush, and I can see that kind of building on itself as one of the fundamentals that might keep pushing prices higher.
Greg, you have a comment?
It's a very difficult situation, and I think it goes without saying, but it is the one thing that I will agree on the beans is I think they are the most bullish commodity, both basis and board, just because of the world demand that there is for beans. You're seeing a lot of things going on at the Gulf right now. I mean, there are vessels to load for beans. There are premiums to be paid for quicker timings to the Gulf. I don't know if that's so much of an issue of timing and loading as it is demand. But right now last year at this time, it seemed like the Asian markets were kind of double booking or double hedging themselves because they were concerned for the South American harvest. But at this time this year, it doesn't appear that they are double booking themselves. So it provides a little bit of resistance as to how much demand we're going to see versus last year's sales. So I mean, I'm certainly more bullish basis on beans and bored on beans for that reason. Corn is just a very difficult scenario. I mean, you've got farmers with a bunch of bins full of corn and paying storage on corn and looking forward to the carries in the market, but those carries will just about pay for the additional charge on the storage. At this time, I would have to agree that I'm kind of in the whole beans camp, and to kind of lighten up on corn a little bit. The price isn't great, but I do think that beans probably hold a little bit more value going into the new year.
Okay, so I want to be clear with Merrill. Merrill, are you, let's see, you want to hold beans, but that's a logistical issue more than anything else. Is that right?
I think so, yes. I think that you're going to see areas, if you can't get the grain out of the north, you're going to see areas giving you some pretty good pops on basis, as well as the price moving up, as long as you got the crush margins you've got right now, they're going to be crushing and they're going to want beans.
And for clarification, would you categorize yourself as more bullish to the bean market than the corn, like Greg did?
I'm one of the reasons I wanted to talk about the confusion is I have some confusion. I don't think this is the time we see the pop yet because of the harvest pressure. I don't know how much the harvest pressure will push us back down. One of the reasons why I guess I'm willing to store soybeans and wait. Now, and then the other issue I have that I'm a little confused with is I see this big mass of corn coming into our markets, again, having the snarl we have in transportation. And if what another advisor was talking about earlier, we are off or have a high usage in this first quarter, or we're off on acres, whichever the case may be, that would take our stocks back down. And last year, sitting in the same situation with corn, we were looking at 420 corn and 2 billion carryout. So I'm a little bit confused as to why we shouldn't go up after we get through the harvest pressure.
Okay, so now Kurt and Matt, I think you got to jump in here because Greg's probably the first one I've really run into of any of our analysts that would feel more bullish the soybean market than the corn market. And I don't know where you guys stand and whether you're whether things are evolving enough that you've changed footing yet or not.
I guess in my opinion, he makes some great points by all means, but I think whenever I look at this market, obviously with the soybeans, everything that was harvested early that was able to be moved was moved. As these guys have said, a lot of guys are tight-fisted holders of beans. In my opinion, though, if this bean market rallies a whole lot more, I have a hard time believing that guys are going to be holding on to them in great fashion. And so if I'm looking forward towards next year, kind of like I was alluding to earlier, there's a lot of talk about what the acreage mix might be for 15, and I know we're still kind of talking about cash, but I want to weave this in because I think whenever we stop and look at what may happen with really the entire corn situation is that prices are awfully low, especially compared to where we were a year ago, as was just mentioned. We were significantly higher a year ago than where we're at today, and we're both situations we were talking 2 billion carryouts. So the farther I look out into the future here, I have to think that this corn market is going to be buoyed a little bit, because if you continue to raise yield and then you keep carry out the same, to me, last year we got a lot of demand that we got from the year before having a bad crop. I don't think we're going to get another 700 or 800 million bushels of of extra demand, I guess, that everyone wasn't really expecting. But what I'm saying is that we're still going to be in a situation that we can't afford to drop acreage significantly, because any weather market situation would be very much exaggerated. And so I think that we have domestically and worldwide a good amount of beans, especially compared to what we've had in the last few years. And I can't imagine that we will be able to rally a whole lot, although I think that the case can definitely be made for that. But I'm kind of like Merrill. I don't think that that time is now. And as well as the corn market, I sure wouldn't be, as I was saying earlier, buying into the corn market. But I think as we move forward here, I think there's going to be some opportunities to re-own corn that I think could pay off quite handsomely if a person is, you know, is patient enough.
Technically, you know, the bean market's got some momentum behind it. You know, speculators like to trade beans, and there's no reason, you know, if the technical crowd gets behind it and get another rain event, we can run bean futures to $10. But, you know, we're going to have a lot of beans for sale. You guys talk a lot about transportation. If we've got transportation problems, past history, you know, South America transportation, that gave us some opportunity to pick up some sales. Well, if we have transportation problem here, what's to say that the world won't turn to South America if we can't, you know, get our inventory at, you know, export positions to move here. So I'm, you know, there's some room to zig and zag, but it's kind of hard for us here, at least, to be real optimistic here, you know, looking at the big picture. You know, as far as being bullish, guys hit on the supply-demand balance sheet. You know, it's going to have to continue to see positive crush margins and a little bit of export demand from Asia on the beans, but the supply-demand balance sheet says corn exports, that's about the only room you really have to go, because feed demand's kind of where it's at, and ethanol demand's kind of where it's at, but corn exports is, you know, something to maybe consider long-term. But like I say, you know, if we've got transportation problems, we can't get the crop where it needs to be to export it, I'm afraid we'll lose demand in the southern hemisphere.
I guess you know, to kind of go back and rebuff some of one of the couple of things I was saying, I would say that it's the problem, the biggest problem I think with the corn export program is that Black Sea and the Ukrainian corn is just terribly cheap by comparison. And last year we kind of got bailed out with the export program a little bit because we were able to be competitive. I view that as a terribly big concern, because like I said previously, the ethanol is kind of what it is, and the feed will be, you know, just about what it is. Those are kind of static numbers. The what I see in the beans is at least somewhat of a better situation. The South Americans, yes, they will get their opportunities without a doubt. But the northern Brazilian beans are having a little bit of a hard time getting into the ground because it's not raining. And for some reason, they don't plant in the dust like the U.S. Farmer will. So they have delayed their planting a little bit, and that's probably drug it out maybe only a week, maybe 10 days. But those are also that falls into that timing issue of when do those markets need to be hit, and there's that gap in there that is either us or them, and if it's not them, it'll have to be us. Logistics will just have to, you know, there just will be a price to pay for it. So I mean, that's kind of this has kind of just been developing over the last few weeks or so. I mean, I definitely think corn will have its moment for sure, but I think given the look of the world right now, if the Brazilians were to have some sort of production hiccup, there's a terribly big upside for beans.
Well, therein lies a big question. I talked with Mike Tenora about this on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. Mike actually talked to me about this, and the secondary problem he seems to think is that not only might they be delayed in their planting of crops this fall by a week or 2 weeks or whatever it is, the further they get into this planting, the later they get into the season for their harvest, but it starts to rain. So they go from a dry season in the primary Brazilian growing areas to a wet season, and they don't really have a winter. So then they get a delay in their harvest because it's wet, and that creates another problem with the second crop because they don't get it in as soon. So there are lots of things, I suppose, that, Greg, you could be thinking about with that crop and where the export market might look for soybeans in particular. I suppose you might be on the right track. You're just the first one I really run across, Greg, that has brought this to the forefront at this point.
Sure. I mean, this is certainly not a short term. It's months, not weeks, where you'll start to see this develop a little bit.
Well, I can remember a lot of years when we start out with 500, 400 million carry out on beans, and by the time you get to the next year, they've somehow disappeared.
They do vanish very easily somehow.
And if his, take Greg's scenario about the beans, if they got delayed enough, if then they got wet, then they would be damaged. That would bring more bean business to us. It would also support what Matt's saying about corn, because then they wouldn't be planting as much corn. And so there you would have an advantage for the corn market also moving higher.
Okay, who among you thought we would be talking about higher prices during October?
I'm tired of talking about lower prices.
Well, it looks like the fundamentals may be shifting, but it's still early in the process, right? I mean, you have to be protective, I think. At least I suppose that's what you're telling most of your customer base. Is that right, Kurt?
Well, a little bit more Ebola spreading around and a couple thousand drop in the Dow would probably change minds in a heartbeat in through here.
The question is, which one's scarier?
Well, that with ISIS, I mean, there's some outside factors we have to keep an eye on. I mean, we can look, short-term, long-term fundamentals, but from a producer's point of view, I think you got to kind of look for some opportunities in through here to sort of take advantage of the ups. I think that, with the crop size, we're going to be dealing with some zigging and zagging this winter, and I believe the thing to be looking at is trying to, take a little out of the middle. But from a producer's point of view, you just got to kind of sit down and push the pencil a little bit and, what's your cash bid and where's the futures and what type of storage costs involved. There's tons of opportunity out there, and I think this volatile time and is going to offer a lot of opportunities for both the bull and the bear.
Matt Bennett, as you listen to this conversation, what do you think are the takeaways that you believe producers should understand about the marketplace?
Well, I think maybe one of the first things is that we've all been a little bit taken off guard by what's happened here in the last couple weeks. Obviously, this isn't something anybody could predict. So we can sit here, and talk all day about where we think things are going to go. But if you had asked us 2 weeks ago, we'd have been dead wrong, I'm guessing. So I think one of the biggest takeaways is, as Kurt was just saying, look at what your profitability is going to be with the decisions that you're making currently, because a lot of guys didn't have as much hedge this year as maybe what they normally do. And much of that had to do with what their production potential looked like. It was a little easier to sit on their hands. But for the ones that did have stuff hedged, I think that it makes it a little bit easier to go ahead and market some grain in here and then go ahead and look to re-own, maybe through a cheap call on paper, whether we're talking corn or beans. But, with the guys that I'm talking to, we're doing a variety of things, and I've had guys ask me, should I store or sell? I mean, obviously, that's the question everyone's asking right now, and you know what? I don't know 100%, but I do think that a combination of the two and with what I'm selling right now, looking to re-own on paper is definitely the way that I've been explaining the market and the way that I will continue to, at least for right now.
Greg Ginder, you've got another thing on your list that I want to take up, crude oil and its price. It's dropped dramatically. It appears that Saudi Arabia would like to put more pressure on the marketplace. How's it playing into the whole commodities game?
It's a very interesting situation. It appears that the OPEC cartel has a little bit of infighting amongst themselves at this time as far as what price should be and how much production there should be. Seeing the crude oil test that $80 mark here, I think got a lot of people got a lot of attention. And I think one of the things that happened because of that is you saw, I don't know if it was margin clerks calling the traders or what it was, but it seemed like everything that they were as far as position went the other way. It looked like an entire risk-off situation. They took their money or their lumps out of the crude oil. They liquidated some cattle and meat positions. They got out of or basically reduced their short positions in the grains and potentially even got longer. So, I mean, it definitely has a crude oil will always be one of those commodities that, you know, if you look at crude oil, you look at the dollar and you look at everything else, you can kind of get a pretty good idea of what's going on in the world. I think the crude oil will probably continue to stay under some pressure here so long as it looks like the members of OPEC are still at loggerheads.
You suppose it's just a realignment down with crude oil being the last peg, realigning to the new plateau for prices? So if you think about corn being at long-term $4.50, $4.60, soybeans in that, $10.50 range, I suppose. The crude oil shouldn't have been at $90 or $100, but should be back down in that $80 range. Do you suppose that's really what's happening, or are there other things?
Well, I would say so. I mean, given everything that the way that the U.S. has decided to use their stocks, and that the world pool of oil seems to have gotten bigger over the last couple of years. I mean, it appears that $100 crude is just not sustainable unless there is some sort of interruption.
Anybody else have thoughts on this?
Well, when you look at, you know, cheaper fuel costs, it's going to help with transportation somewhat, but also, too, if you take crude oil down to $60 a barrel, that's going to slow some of the demand out of the Dakotas, which would free out some rail transportation. So there's several moving parts here that it's going to be quite interesting to see how it unfolds here as we go in the spring.
I read one thought where they are trying to, and this came across one of the wire stories, that they might be trying to push the prices lower by continuing to pump in order to put a little more pressure on Russia's economy.
It is definitely politicized. That is, crude oil is one of those easy commodities that they can use as a political weapon. Also, that's absolutely true.
Since we're on the outside markets, anybody concerned about China's economy? I'll take that as a no. what haven't we covered that maybe we should have as we begin to wrap this process up?
Todd, I think as I was talking before, you know, I just looking today at fertilizer prices, you know, guys trying to figure out what they're going to do for next year. It's crazy, but potash for the most part in the Midwest is about the same price as last year. And DAP is up anywhere between $50 to $75 a ton. And as you know, prices are significantly lower, you know, looking ahead towards next year than what we were looking at last year, about a dollar lower. And so, you know, I think moving ahead, I think that there's a lot of implications. And I think as we talk about, I mean, I've already talked about what I think about 15, but you know, I think that there's a lot going on out here in the countryside, and the weather is certainly in a big part of corn-on-corn country that's shrunk some, albeit the last couple of years, is not going to be conducive for guys being able to have big corn acreage next year, even if we do get a run-up in prices. So looking ahead, I just think that it's something we need to keep an eye on. And I don't, I'm always a big advocate of hedging, but you know, I'm sure not looking to sell any of these 15 corn right now.
One other observation too, talking to some of these seed guys, especially on wheat seed, as late as we're getting here, this weather really cooperates. Some of these guys are talking about returning quite a bit of this wheat seed back, so especially here in the eastern belt.
And those acres in the eastern corn belt certainly will go into something else. I suppose they'll just go to soybeans in the eastern corn belt as opposed to corn, don't you think?
That's what I've been hearing so far.
Final thoughts. We'll start with you, Merrill Crowley.
Well, it's obvious why there's confusion in the marketplace as we talk about the different fundamentals that can affect this market. I think you're going to have to use flexibility, and I think you have to develop a plan to be prepared to react to whatever situation comes down the pike.
Kurt Kimmel?
Yeah, I agree with Beryl there. You guys had a lot of good observations on the program today, and I think it's going to create a lot of, we'll keep the volatility high, a lot of anxiety, a lot of market movement, and you know, flexibility is a major point.
Matt Bennett.
Yeah, I agree with these guys. I just think producers need to be very aware of exactly what market moves are going to mean to their bottom line and have a good plan moving forward because, as you know, guys have a lot of bushels to market this year and they've got a lot of unsold bushels. Marketing mistakes could be deadly.
And Greg Ginder.
Yeah, I would agree along the same lines. Risk management is really the key this year to being profitable. There needs to be definitely a plan talked about and put into place and prices that are acceptable to live with so that, you know, we can see this crop through and look into next year and then start making adjustments for what we might need to do for next year's pricings.
This has been the October 16th edition of Commodity Week. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Merrill Crowley from Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, Greg Ginder from FC Stone in Chesterfield, Missouri, and Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.